Good evening. Good evening. Welcome to your Tuesday Night Live. It is Stefan Molyneux. As you can see, we've upgraded the stereo. We've upgraded the studio. I dusted the fabric. It's magic. It's new. It's beautiful. Even less to distract you from my glorious forehead. So, welcome, welcome, welcome. We got a lot of lots to talk about tonight. Let's start off with your questions. Have you looked into the no proof of the existence of viruses position? I have. In fact, somebody sent me a whole book about that, which I read. And I did not find it convincing. Again, I'm obviously no expert, but I did not find it convincing. There was a lot of assertions, like the Spanish flu was caused by the radio signals and blah, blah, blah. I did not find it particularly convincing. And so I remain, for what it's worth, unconvinced. All right. Happy Tuesday. Good evening. Bitcoin afterburners flamed out. Yeah, there was a... You see... It all depends. So the price of Bitcoin. Yeah, what happened today, right? Some exciting stuff happened today. So let's see. What did it hit a high of? This is Canadian dollars, 92.883. And then it crashed as low as what? 82. Can I zoom in a little here? No, I don't think it'll let me zoom in quite that much. But yeah, it went down considerably. And now it's going back up. So this is not a problem. It's not a, in my view, it's not a problem, right? All it means is that Bitcoin is being transferred from those who think it won't go up to those who think it will go up. Do you understand? That's all that's happening. It is being transferred. I mean, you don't buy Bitcoin to stare at the aesthetics of it like a Ingres painting or something like that, right? So when the price goes down, it means that those people who think that the price won't go up are selling it to the people who think the price will go up. In other words, Bitcoin is being transferred from the pessimists to the optimists. I don't see how that's a bad thing. I think that's a very good thing. I think that is the basis for a new stability. Now, as far as price goes, you know, I don't make any predictions. I'll give opinions from time to time, but I really don't make any particular predictions because you can't. Like, nobody can. But I will say this, that the ETFs kind of lock people into the position, right? So if you've had, you know, one of these big exchange traded funds, you know, getting in is kind of easy. Sometimes to get out, it can be a little trickier, right? It can be contractual things. You have exit fees or you get an incentive for staying in. So people have an incentive to stay into Bitcoin, which wasn't the case when people were largely buying and selling on their own cognizance. So I think it's going to be upwardly sticky to a large degree. It's a possibility, right? ATM says, oh, ATM sent a tip. Thank you. Seems appropriate. Big raise and a bonus coming my way. Wouldn't be where I am without your knowledge over the years, Steph. Well, I am thrilled to hear that and massive, massive congratulations. Bob says, $100 donation at freedomain.com/donate. The old me would have spent it on a date with the wrong woman this weekend. Your books are great. Thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate that. It dipped after a high. How unusual. Is this the beginning of the end for Bitcoin? Right. Making it to 69K would have been nice. Yes. What have I hidden in my pocket? The voice of Steph live. I thought I heard some balls. Lord. Stefan of the House Molyneux. Says Philip, slayer of sophistry and bringer of truth. That's right. And Fivehead. It's almost like people don't understand the difference between investing and trading. I think that was my very, was that my very first podcast that I wasn't just reading one of my articles. My very first podcast was about the difference between trading and investing. I love it when Bitcoin is on sale and I can acquire more. Buy the dip. Buy the dip. That's what a lot of people believe. And I am relatively satisfied with that. That thing, with that idea. All right. So if you have questions, hit me with your questions. I'm going to flicker and irradiate. Let's see, can I get this to be a little less bright? Some of these websites have dark options. It's like, I feel like I'm getting a tan here. All right, so it's a pretty interesting article. Pretty interesting article. This is from Upworthy.com, which I think is a voting site. And this is a couple of days ago. 10 things kids get in trouble for that adults get away with all the time. Why do we expect children to have more self-control than grown-ups? Exactly. So here are some things. Being hangry. Do you have a problem with hangry? I can be a little bit. I can have a little bit of trouble with, am I annoyed at the world or just short of sugar? So grown-ups are so familiar, says the writer. Grown-ups are so familiar with being cranky when they need food that they coined the term hangry. And yet if a child melts down because they're hungry, they're expected to pull themselves together and stop that fussing. Sure, kids have to learn to regulate their emotional expression, but being punished for needing food and not being able to control their reactions to hunger yet isn't going to teach them that regulation. They have a hard enough time learning that skill when they aren't hungry, so give kids a little grace when the hanger hits and always carry snacks. Oh, man. Oh, I feel the rant. I feel the rant. Is it the right time? Is it the wrong time? Is it a good time? Is it a bad time? I feel it's time for the rant. Hit me with a why if you've noticed that kids, according to mostly their moms, can't go more than 39 seconds without snacks. Have you seen this? Now, I may have grown up a little bit underprivileged as far as this goes, because for me, I was hungry a lot as a kid, right? I would hang around friends' places hoping to get invited to dinner or whatever, right? And it seems like it's gone to the opposite extreme. Oh, the kids are out of the park and out comes the trays of cookies and the trays of cut fruit and the trays of vegetables and mostly it's crap. And it's just like, oh my God. You know, we lived in a state of perpetual hunger for most of our evolution, right? And it's wild to me. And it's like, can kids just play? Can they just go to the park and they just hang out without there needing to be a whole Ponderosa-style cruise ship, endless array of food all over the place? Good Lord, people. Good Lord. And it's funny because, of course, in general, you see the boys running around a lot and the girls just sitting there snacking. And I'm not entirely sure that the girls, the teenage girls these days, need more snacking, but it's just wild to me. You can't get kids together without there being snacks. Why? Why? Well, you don't want them to get hungry. And it's like, they're fine. They don't need snacks all the time. They don't need an array of food that would choke a herd of palominos. They don't need it. Just let them run around. Let them play. Let them burn off some calories. They don't need to have their calories replenished right away. You know, we have this little thing called fat storage, which if you're not over 30, you may not be available. It may not be available to you, but there's that little muffin toff of emergency backup arse meat that you can basically consume anytime your calories dip below 4,000 a day. But I don't remember that at all when I was a kid. I mean, sometimes if you'd go to another kid's house, there'd be snacks, you know, sort of later in the afternoon, but most of my friends didn't have snacks. Thank you for the tip, Dorbin. The best live stream in the Milky Way. Thanks, Jeff. They need juice LVs? IVs? They need juice IVs? I don't know what it is. I mean, do the moms get anxious if the kids haven't eaten in 20 minutes? I mean, and of course, what happens is you train the kids to just constantly need food. Jared says, the number of cupcakes at the dance club yesterday wasn't fair. I came to lose calories, not gain them. Yeah. Do not eat. Just apply directly to back fat. Just net it in. It's getting there anyway. Just make it more efficient. So I don't know. Maybe somebody can explain to me how it has come about that kids can't assemble anywhere without 19 tiers of infinite snacks. I don't follow. I don't understand. It doesn't make any sense to me. And I mean, I'm the kind of guy, I don't really eat till mid-afternoon anyway, but yeah, it's very strange. Zim says, this is reminding me that how my mom insisted on feeding my kids garbage like she had no choice is another reason why I should have cut ties with my mother after I became a father. Oh, with your mother after you became a father? Please. Yeah, it's a strange thing, right? Anyway, minor rant, but it's a new thing in society. All kids have to have all food all the time. And I don't know if it seems to be some female competition matrix. Brooksmeister says, but the precious little darlings might starve to death. Yes, yes, yes. Actually, it's kind of funny. After ranting about typos for quite a while, I made an important typo in a message to Jared the other day. Said, oops, kind of ironic, isn't it? So it happens, you know, just keep them to a minimum. If you can, I do them too. I just keep them to a minimum if you can. But at least it wasn't live tips, man. So, all right. So let's get back to things that that adults get away with that kids don't, right? Somebody says, I'm guessing it's because the moms are overweight and hungry, so they make the kids eat. Like some moms might make a kid wear a coat because the mom is cold. Maybe. Yeah, maybe the moms are used to snacking a lot too. I don't know what it is. It's just weird to me. All right, so other things that kids get in trouble for that adults get away with all the time. Number two, so number one is being hangry. Number two, not wanting to share something special. The concept of sharing is something most parents try to instill in their kids in order to move them away from self-centeredness. That's not a bad thing for sure, but it's worth noting that most adults have certain special belongings that they don't want other people to use, which is totally fine. So expecting kids to always share everything doesn't really make any sense. Instead, teach kids that if they have something special that they don't want to share, to keep that item put away when other kids are around. They can also learn to kindly say, actually, that toy is extra special to me, but I'm happy to let you play with this one while offering something else. Yeah. Three, breaking dishes, dropping drinks, or other oopsies. How many of us don't break a dish on occasion simply due to fumbling fingers? Accidents happen, and it's not always because we're being careless. If a kid is tossing a dish up in the air and trying to catch it before they're back, behind their back, of some of the foolish game that's worth talking about. That's worth a talking to about carelessness. Why? I think that's kind of cool. Maybe the kid's going to end up in the circus. But if a child breaks something or drops something, our first reaction shouldn't be to get angry and blame or shame them. Grown-ups don't get in trouble when they drop something. Kids who have a lot less experience with their hands definitely shouldn't. Model forgiveness and compassion by helping them clean up the mess and move on. Very true. Right. Number four, not responding immediately. Did you hear what I said? Are you listening? We ask our children mere minutes after they had to repeat, mommy, 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 mommy to us before we were responding to them. We can't expect our kids to immediately pull their attention away from what they're doing every time we want to say something to them, just as we can't always immediately shift our focus to them if we're putting together a recipe or typing out a thought or in the middle of a calculation. It's reasonable to teach kids to respectfully say, one second, please, if we want their attention when they're in the middle of something. That teaches them that their learning slash play is worth concentrating on, but also that responding to their parents is important. Give them a little time to disengage, just as adults grant one another all the time if we need to talk, right? A personal space too, yeah. My daughter knew some kids who come to the house and it's like, they just want to go through your stuff. And it's like, no, you don't do that. It's just weird. Forgetting things. Adults sometimes forget their lunchbox at home. Adults sometimes leave their jacket someplace by accident. Forgetting things is a normal human phenomenon, not limited to children. And we all give one another grace when we forget something. With kids, we tend to be less forbearing. If forgetting is a daily occurrence, then sure, it might need to be addressed. But making a kid go hungry because they forgot their lunch, even though we could easily bring it to them because this will teach them to remember, is kind of silly. Would we do that to our spouse if they forgot their lunch? No, why do it with a kid? Again, unless it's a recurring habit. No, not even if it's a recurring habit. Six, refusing to eat something. We all have likes and dislikes, and one man's feast is another man's napkin food. We would never force an adult who doesn't like sweet potatoes to stay at the table until they finish their sweet potatoes. Why do that to kids? Encouraging kids to try something they never tasted is one thing, but making them eat something they tried and didn't like is just ick. Kids can learn to be grateful for the food they have without being made to eat everything on their plate. Provide lots of options, encourage tasting, but don't force kids to eat anything. That's a quick way to take the enjoyment out of trying new foods and create a negative association with eating certain foods, the exact opposite of what you're wanting. Most kids will grow out of picky eating, but there will always be certain things people don't care for. It's okay to let that be. Okay, so let me just break this. What do you guys hate to eat? What if the choice between this food and starvation was there? Would it be like, I don't know, man. Starvation could be preferable. What do you have to flip? What is the foods that you just really find repulsive? So for me, I had a bad banana as a kid, and it took me a year or two to even begin to think about eating bananas again. That's just hardwired in. When I was a kid, corn out of the can. I really still, I like a lot corn on the cob, but corn out of the can really repulsed me. It was just gross. Not just the flavor, but the shape and texture of Brussels sprouts is quite repulsive. Now, I've had Brussels sprouts with sauces and so on, and they're not so bad. But oh my gosh, it's just horrendous. It's just, I can't even. And there's most stuff I can eat. I'm not a big fan of dim sum either. And maybe some of the more snake soup and sea slug Chinese delicacies is not quite my thing in particular. I can eat seafood as long as I don't think of it as sea cockroaches, sea insects. Then I have a little bit of trouble with it. Of course, when we when we had ducks, and actually we have ducks again, just today I went to pick up ducks. We have more ducks. And I can't eat the duck eggs. There's just something about eating something that you know came out of a local creature's ass. I just can't quite get there. I just, you know, maybe if it's my daughter wants to use it to bake stuff, use the duck eggs to bake stuff. And we've got some friends coming to visit who like duck eggs. So, but I can't. I was able to for a little bit, like when you feed ducks certain foods, you can taste it in their eggs. But I just, now it's just like makes me nauseous. All right. So what have you guys got? Anchovies? Not a fan, but I'd still eat them rather than starve. Raw onions? I really love raw onions myself. Brussels sprouts, chickpeas, love chickpeas too, but they're not particularly kind to my fart production centers. Beef kidneys? What the hell are beef kidneys? Is that just the kidney of a cow? Yeah, liver is pretty repulsive. Cucumber and raw tomatoes, Indian street food. Right. Let's see here. Ambergris? Why do I vaguely remember that? But I'm not sure what is that. What is it? Ambergris? Ambergris? Solid, waxy, flammable substance of a dull gray or blackish color produced in the digestive system of sperm whales? It's not a food, is it? Highly valued by perfume makers. No, so that's not a food. Oh, I get it. It's like a joke. Okay. All right. I didn't think that was a food. Tomatoes and beans in sauce. Yes. Beans. Good for the heart. The more you eat, the more you fart. Peas. Well, fresh peas are good. Mushy peas out of the can. Not so good. Made Bay dinner. Where is he going? I remember doing that in one of my social media reviews. Made Bay dinner. Where are you going? He go into an emergency room, had corn out of the can. Yeah, it was gross. Eggs, any way they're prepared is a no for me. Yeah, I like deviled eggs, although I have them almost never. Oysters, they are basically sea snot, and that's not great. Soft shell crab is off-putting, yeah. I even eat strange Asian food. Even as I travel, but cucumbers make me gag. I like cucumbers, but lasagna, hate it, had it. On a flight as a kid made me vomit. Oh, gosh. Well, maybe that was just the flight aspect of it, right? There were sailors who would eat ambergris with eggs. Really? A Korean friend made me a delicacy once. Jellyfish served cold. That's a cold friend, man. Ricotta spinach ravioli with olive oil. Ooh, that's good. I like ricotta myself. Assorted salted offal. Seafood and a balut, a Filipino bird embryo, half-formed and cooked. Oh, God. Doesn't sound great. Sea cucumber. Yeah, it's just sea slug, right? Steak and eggs, enough said. Oh, now we're... I love eggs. Okay, so now we're doing the foods you like. Because you're all just rebels. I ask you for one thing, foods you dislike, and like, here's the foods I like. You can't control me, man. All right. Other things that kids... don't get away with it, adults too. 7, fidgeting. Some people have a really hard time sitting still for long periods of time, adults and children alike. But kids are the ones who get in trouble for not sitting still. Look at how popular standing desks, under the desk treadmills, and walking meetings have become for working adults. And that's even when they have comfortable ergonomic office chairs to sit in. Yet kids are expected to sit in uncomfortable desks most of the day without being able to get up and move around as they need to. No wonder some kids get fidgety. Yes. 8, being in a bad mood. We all have our moments, don't we? Times when we're just feeling salty or irritable, and we don't even know why. Maybe it's hormones, maybe it's anger, maybe it's a full moon, whatever it is. We let people know we're feeling prickly and do what we need to do to either stay away from people or put ourselves right. What certainly wouldn't help is having someone chide us for having a bad attitude and insisting that we shape up. I could use a little bit less of this attitude. Right? Helping kids manage their mood or alter their environment when they're struggling to manage is a much more effective life skill than punishing them for being in a bad mood. Right. Complaining. Ever seen a grown-up sit down to do their taxes without a single complaint? Nope. You haven't, because even if we're getting a refund, the process of figuring it out is painful. Plenty of adults complain when we have to do something we don't want to do. And it's not because we were raised that way most of the time. It's because some things just suck. And it makes us feel better in the moment to express how much they suck. What kids complain about may seem trivial or silly to us, but it's not to them. Totally fine to teach kids that complaining doesn't do any good, but not worth punishing them for it. Complaining doesn't do any good? All right. Annie, yes. I think that's a total lie, Annie. Complaining doesn't do any good. It's called nagging. It's called feminism. And it actually moves trillions of dollars around in the world and gets women lots of jobs and benefits and bonuses and pensions. And right. So yes, complaining does a huge amount of good, but not for men. Sneaking sweets. Hi, guilty pretty much daily. It's technically not sneaking when you own the sweets and you're a grown up, but it feels like it. And who can blame kids for wanting to raid the cookie jar or the chocolate chip stash? Not saying they should, just saying, I get it, kid. So what else belongs on this list? It's good. It was a good article. And it is really terrible. Kids are treated as such unbelievably disposable secondhand citizens. It's crazy. I'll give you a link to the article because I think it's good. It might be worth sharing to others or sharing for others. Not bad. Not bad. All right. We have, let me just get to my other things here, of which I have saved for your enjoyment. Let me ask you this. Now, being late or calling in sick? Oh, yeah. Pretending to be ill so you don't have to go to work? Yep. Kids do it for school and adults do it to work. let me ask you this. This is for the men. As a man, did you ever feel burdened by body image standards for men? Did you ever feel like, oh my gosh, I have to have abs or I have to have this or that? Did you ever feel burdened by body requirements for men? Because that really came about in the 70s with two major influences. One was Rocky with Sylvester Stallone, which is actually a pretty wild story. He wrote the script for Rocky and he was offered like $1 million. He was broke and he was offered like $1 million for the script, but he said, no, I want to star in it. And he held off and they eventually did cast him in it. And it's a pretty wild story about how he ended up becoming a movie star. And so it was Pumping Iron with Arnold Schwarzenegger, which was a documentary. And then it was suddenly everybody needed delts and abs and biceps and triceps with Rocky and all of that. And it just came about like, it was like overnight. Yeah, I remember once doing a business in California and I went to work out on the beach gym at Venice Beach. And I'm not hugely muscular, of course, as you know, but I was definitely the smallest guy there, like by far. Now, let me ask you this. Do you think that it's easier for women to achieve a good physique by these standards, or is it easier for men to achieve a good physique by male standards? Is it easier for women to have a good physique or a good figure by female standards, or is it easier for men to have a good physique by male standards, or is it about the same? Just out of your thoughts regarding this. It's easier for women for sure. Yeah. So women don't need muscles. Right. Women don't, all women need to do is, you know, not eat too much and some exercise, right? Whereas men need to not eat as much and 2 hours a day in the gym. Yeah, just for women in general, just don't be fat and it's fine. Now, of course, there are these toned women and all that. But for women, it's just don't be fat. For men, it's like don't be fat and have ridiculous amounts of muscles. And yeah, of course, makeup for women is easier than because men don't really wear makeup. So it's quite a bit different. For all of that. Yeah, men need diet, maybe sometimes steroids. They need massive amounts of self-discipline because it's not just about deprivation. It's also a huge amount of exercise. So, so when it comes to sort of body standards, it's just interesting that women feel oppressed by body standards, whereas I felt when the muscle stuff came out, I felt pretty inspired. And since then, I started doing my weights and exercise and all of that. And yeah. Again, it's not a lot of sympathy for male body standards, even though male body standards are generally harder. The best female physiques are almost entirely determined by genes. Well, no, but to have a good physique in general for women, you just need to not be fat. Like men are just like, okay, if you're not fat, I mean, I'm not saying you'd be bikini model or whatever it is, right? But all right. So yeah, I thought that was interesting. And have you ever heard a woman express a great deal of sympathy for, you know, if you look at, is it easier, the example I saw, is it easier to look like Gal Gadot or is it easier to look like Chris Hemsworth? Like is it easier for women to be slender or is it easier for men to look like Chris Hemsworth or Ryan Gosling has this body that looks like it's photoshopped from Plato's erotic fantasies. Steph, what do you say about the huge increase in eating disorders with women due to certain culture pushing female models as ideal body standards? No, that's not it. No, I mean, are you saying that female ideals have never existed before in history? No, eating disorders, to me, again, it's just my particular opinion, no proof. Eating disorders come out of the massive rise in sexual abuse that has occurred as the result of fathers being out of the home. So no, women have always had these pressures and these standards, always. I mean, if you look at the WASP-waist women of the 1940s or the pinup girls of the 19, or the flappers of the 1920s, or if you look at the tiny 15-inch Victorian waist ideal of the 1880s or 1870s, women have always had these standards, always. So no, the rising eating disorders is terrible. This is why Westerners are obsessed with Asians. They're still majority skinny rails, yeah. Yeah, most of these actors take steroids. I think so. Or even if it's not steroids, maybe they're just genetically gifted. But even if it's not steroids, it's 3+ hours a day in the gym and then like savagely strict dieting requirements and so on. So yeah, it's interesting. Woman says, staying in good shape has never helped me much. Being born with small tits is still a flipping curse. Well, but if you talk to the women with Sydney Sweeney racks for days, they also have their own issues, back pain and over-sexualized attention and so on. So it's not easy either. Sadly, a lot of teens get on steroids and completely jack up their skin/body. Well, they have roid rage, right? And isn't it bad for skin and all that? Yeah, bad for their skin and all that kind of stuff too, so. Steph, why is architecture so freaking ugly today? I visited an old train station here in the States, and the beauty just took my freaking breath away. Nothing like this is built today, right? Because people think that economic efficiency is more important than beauty, and it's not. It's not. The vertical ice cube trades. I did a whole podcast about this recently, about beauty, and it's in one of the recent, Jared, if you know. Oh, Jared or James, if you can remember the one I did about beauty. Now, beauty is ridiculously inefficient, but really the only thing worth fighting for. So the reason things are ugly is to depress you, and so that you won't defend your culture and you won't prefer your culture, and you'll just look around and see ugliness and your spirit gets crushed and destroyed and you have nothing to defend. So what I'm hearing here is average breasts win. Right. You know, like the guys who have great hair, they get, you know, some positive female attention. But one of the reasons why balding guys are around is that when you're balding, you have a greater haste to get a mate, right? Like, there was this guy on Seinfeld who was shaving his head, and he did it because he thought it looked cool. What's that line? Is he from the future? And anyway, so the bald guy, George, said, oh yeah, you are actually balding. I can tell, like Widow's Peak, you got maybe a year. And he's like, oh my God, I've got to get married. Because men can continue to date and be fertile into their 70s and 80s. Something needs to accelerate men settling down, and losing your hair is one of the things that has men say, I gotta lock it down before I go bald. And there are a lot of guys, and you've heard them on the call-in shows, guys who are still sleeping around and they're in their 40s and they're dating women 15 years younger, 20 years younger. And I'm like, well, you still have a full head of hair, right? Yeah, I do. Right. So there's this certain Peter Pan agelessness that happens with guys who don't lose their hair. So losing your hair, yeah, I get it's a drag and all of that when you're young, but man, first of all, it saves you massive amounts of time. Massive amounts of time. And, you know, not having to do or worry about your hair, but also it impels you to work faster. And of course, also hair loss would be great in combat, right? Remember, most times people didn't have any good way of cutting their hair. So in combat, if you were bald, there was less hair to grab onto in combat. So have you heard of the guys in their mid-30s who lie about their age to get laid? Yeah, I don't, have you heard of the women who lie about everything with their hair and makeup? Everything? I mean, have you seen that thing where women take off the makeup and what it looks like underneath? I mean, the idea that men are somehow false in their dating approach is completely irrelevant to just how false women are as a whole with this incredible amounts of makeup and sometimes cosmetic surgery and lip fillers and buccal fat suctioning. And basically they look like vampires are eating them from the inside out. So yeah, it's really, really terrible. Yeah. Guys will lie to get laid, but women will start lying often the moment they get out of the shower and they don't stop until the moment they get back into the shower. So I can say that because I don't do makeup in my show. I'm one of the few people who is on camera who doesn't use any makeup. Why would I? I am what I am. I look as I look. All right, just going to do a refresh here because something's not coming in. All right, so let me go check here. Bit of melons. Yeah. When are you returning to X? I have no particular plans. If hair loss on the scalp is good for combat, how come men grow beards? So men grow beards because if you try to grab a man by the beard, he can bite you, right? Whereas if you get grabbed by the top of the head, you can't bite, right? So I'm 28 and have seen some changes in hair, which I can confirm scares the crap out of me. I mean, I was more than half bald. I was mostly bald by 28. So yeah, and I get it. It's, you know, it's tough, but I mean, you lose some useful vanity, but you gain some absolute wisdom. Did you read, this is how retarded academia has become. And I apologize for insulting anybody who's mentally handicapped by putting them in the same category as academia. But did you read, there's this article that was floating around about how in ancient times, women were better hunters than men. Have you seen this absolute midwit IQ test called women were just better hunters? In the ancient, well, like in prehistoric times, women were better hunters. I mean, I honestly don't even know what to say. about that. All right, hit me with some of the reasons as to how you don't even need to, you just need to read the headline. Like, hit me with all of the reasons as to why you know that's false without even checking anything. I read that. I'm like, no. Oh, government schools, you have certainly done your job. You have certainly done your job. Boobs. Hand-eye coordination. Throat like a girl, somewhat. Animal women love animals too much to hunt. Women carry babies for 9 months. The alpha women hunted the boars while the men stayed in the huts. somebody says, no makeup, and I'm so happy I have small breasts. What you see is what you get. Good, good. All right. They publish that stuff to boost their DEI scores for grants. Yes, probably. But I mean, come on, man. Come on. I mean, how do you even, this just, anybody who believes that, because less women died hunting due to them almost never hunting. Right. Right. So what did they, how do they prove this? Well, they didn't prove this with anything factual in particular, and I'm just going off my memory of the article here. But in general, they were doing things like, well, you know, women have a slight edge on ultra marathons, like, I don't know, 100 miles or more, they have a slight edge on men. But that doesn't mean anything with regards to hunting. And, well, yeah, women were there to take care of the pets and the livestock, so they get very attached to animals. And also they were saying, well, you know, there are women who are buried with hunting tools. Like, there are women who are buried with hunting tools. Listen, I'm sure there were some great female hunters. Absolutely. I'm sure there were. Yeah, yeah, here we go. Scientists suggest prehistoric women were better at hunting than men because they'd talk so much the animals would just die. That's the Babylon Bee. That's pretty funny. Crazy. So, yeah, so a couple of reasons. First of all, men would have not developed significantly more upper body strength, lung capacity, and speed if they weren't hunting, right? Nature doesn't just put things in there that cost resources for no reason, right? So the fact that men, in almost all circumstances, have greater strength, greater endurance, greater hand-eye coordination, greater ability to focus, greater monofocus, that higher testosterone, greater aggression, all of that stuff is highly tuned to hunting. All of it. Like without any exception. It's all tuned to hunting. So there's that. The fact that women are big with child a lot means that they can't be good hunters while they're pregnant. They can't be good hunters after they give birth. Why? Because they've got babies to breastfeed. Now you can't bring a baby along in a hunt. I mean, can you imagine? Okay, we're sneaking up now, kid. Don't cry. Don't get gassy. Don't have colic. Don't be upset. Don't wake up suddenly because mommy's got to bring down a bison. I'm not trying to be contrarian, but as hunters, we are endurance hunters mostly, following an animal until the animal passes out from exhaustion. Yeah, I fully accept that. Yeah, we are one of the most endurance species known on the planet. No question. No, I absolutely accept that for sure. And in fact, when I was hunting deer in Africa, I shot a deer, didn't kill it, and we trailed it until we found it and killed it. Women made better foragers, not hunters. Yeah, of course. I mean, I still don't know where things are in the grocery store. My wife can drive by a grocery store and somehow it uploads an entire architectural map to her brain. It's wild. It's wild. Like, the CAD cam upload happens just by driving by. We go in there and she's like, beep, beep, beep. Oh, here's where you can find the tomatoes and here's where the anchovies are and here's where the, she just knows. I can have a grocery store down the road for 10 years and I'm like, food cans on shelf somewhere. I went hunting in Africa. I did as a teenager. Yeah, I went hunting in Africa, shotgun. I shot turkey buzzards and I shot a deer and tracked the deer. Which was fairly easy because I shot it well and it was bleeding out. Tracked a deer and we ate them both. We ate them both. And we were hunting, I was in sort of farmland area. We were hunting the deer because the natural predators had been driven away. So we actually needed to hunt the deer so that the crops could grow. I don't think I've ever told that story. I guess I have. I remember on that same farm, there was I was learning how to ride a horse and it was a horse that had just foaled. And so it was very hard to get the mother horse away from the farm. But the moment we turned back, she just went off on a gallop to get back to her foal. And I was just kind of hanging on, just kind of hanging on. But yeah, that was in Barberton? No, Cape Town? Can't remember. But yeah, it was. I was staying at a missionary's house. And he took me hunting. No, his son took me hunting. So yes, I have done some hunting in Africa. So yeah, we are definitely endurance hunters, but yeah, so women are a smaller, weaker, less hand-eye coordination and spatial reasoning, right? Men trump women. Women have lots of things that they trump men on, but one of the ways that men trump women is spatial reasoning, which is, of course, perfectly aligned to trajectories and bows and arrows and spears and, you know, slings and rocks and all that kind of stuff, right? So, also, menstruation, right? If the woman is bleeding, a lot of animals are very sensitive to the scent of blood, and that would not be ideal. What about the weight of the animal coming back, right? To carry some big-ass deer, it's a couple of 500, 800 pounds, carrying that back, I think that men would be slightly better than that. So, yeah, it's just a wild thing to me that anybody would look at this and say, yeah, it seems legit to me. Sure, absolutely. Just one of these things, you just have to look at it. You just have to look at it and say, I don't need to look at it. Like, I can't possibly need to look at this, right? Because this is so not true at all that even thinking that it might be true is an insult to your intelligence, in my view, right? Now, maybe they've got really good arguments that I don't really understand or whatever, but I just don't see how that could even remotely be possible. I shared this with my daughter. Somebody wrote, me, what did you do in school today? 5-year-old, learned about dragons. Me, your class learned about dragons? 5-year-old, I learned about dragons. I don't know what everybody else was doing. Oh my gosh. Men protesting men's violence against women. Here's the data. Men kill about 4,000 wives every year. I think this is in the US. Women kill about 3,000 husbands per year and 4 times as many children as men. So women kill 4 times as many children as men. Half the time men kill wives, the men are not charged because it was self-defense. So yeah, this is kind of funny, right? Let's see here. This was pretty good. Men pay other women to raise their children, so their wives can go to work for another man to get a paycheck to pay the other women to raise their children. A man dual-wielding raw steaks slaps diners in the face at a vegan restaurant yelling, if you don't eat your meat, you can't have any pudding. Let's see here. I did store some of the rebuttals. Oh, I like this. This is a yowling cat being thrown out of a room or being dragged out of a room. Me getting escorted out of the library after tearing off covers of books in the mystery section to make them more mysterious. Another picture of when you take your kids fishing in Florida and they catch their first brick of weed. Pretty funny. Somebody wrote, I'm in Paris and I ordered an oat milk latte and the waiter said, no. Have you guys seen the new Shogun? Just out of curiosity. A man who thought he was suffering from lung cancer underwent urgent surgery to remove a cancerous growth in his lungs. The surgeons discovered the man did not have lung cancer. The growth was actually just a toy traffic cone he inhaled 40 years ago. Good to know. Oh, this is a wild statistic. The 1% of male adoptees with biological parents who had 3 or more convictions were responsible for 30% of the sample's convictions when they grew up. So 1% of the male adoptees of biological parents who had themselves 3 or more convictions were responsible for 30% of the convictions when they grew up. So crime is very concentrated, and that would not be environmental. Is this true? In the US, you're 12 times more likely to be killed by a doctor than someone with a firearm. It's quite something. I love, you know, that meme of the knights all with their swords going in on the round table. So this is Greek philosophers Backstreet Boys, Math Problems, Tell Me Why. Brilliant. Brilliant stuff. The average cloud weighs an estimated 1.1 million pounds or 500 ton. 1.1 million pounds. The average cloud. Isn't that wild? Let's see here. Oh, yeah, so this is somebody rebutting. Why can't the article that says women are better hunters? Why can't women throw like men then? Why is our skeleton, muscles, mechanics all socialized to throw harder, faster, farther, and more accurately? How come there are no female pitchers who can throw like MLB pitchers? Ah, yes, here we go. Oh, don't tell me. Can I search my bookmarks? Can I search my bookmarks? I don't want to clear all my bookmarks. I just want to search them. Can I search my bookmarks? Oh, yeah, I click on it and it just took me to the top of my bookmarks because I don't know what's going on with the programming here, but it's like they never use their own product, right? I mean, one of the first things I would ever do is use my own product when I was programmer. Just use my own product. If you don't use your own product. All right, did we make it? Oh, yes. This article has been making the rounds today. It's obviously wrong. I'll explain why explicitly by breaking down the claims of these mainstream anthropologists. And this is from November 1st, 2023. The theory that men evolved to hunt and women evolved to gather is wrong. So what do we see here? The article was written by two anthropologists. This is from Samuel Urban. I looked them up and I'm actually quite impressed by the work. Isn't as bad as I expected, but they're essentially wrong and rely on bad conclusions nonetheless. This article is based on attacking a theory from the 1960s. And the quote is, I think this is what they're criticizing. Oh no, this is from the article. Even if you're not an anthropologist, you've probably encountered one of these field's most influential notions, known as man the hunter. The theory proposes that hunting was a major driver of human evolution and that men carried this activity out to the exclusion of women. It holds that human ancestors had a division of labor rooted in biological differences between males and females, in which males evolved to hunt and provide and females tended to children and domestic duties. It assumes that males are physically superior to females and that pregnancy and child rearing reduce or eliminate a female's ability to hunt. The first paragraph makes this claim and disregards the idea that males were primarily hunters and females primarily gatherers. Nonsense because this theory was based on hundreds of years of anthropological research not coming out of a vacuum in the 1960s. It is a common idea in anthropology, almost accepted truth, and I agree, that human beings, Homo sapiens, that humans were endurance hunters, but they then explicitly cite exercise science as the first evidence of why females were hunters. Unfortunately, this is, and they quote, mounting evidence from exercise science indicates that women are physiologically better suited than men to endurance efforts such as running marathons. This advantage bears on questions about hunting because a prominent hypothesis contends that early humans are thought to have pursued prey on foot over long distances, as Zimf said, until the animals were exhausted. Furthermore, the fossil and archaeological records, as well as ethnographic studies of modern-day hunter-gatherers, indicate that women have a long history of hunting game. We still have much to learn about female athletic performance and the lives of prehistoric women. Nevertheless, the data we do have signal that it's time to bury man, the hunter, for good. So then Samuel, in his rebuttal, says, but they do not cite normal endurance, but instead extreme endurance events, such as a 21-mile swim and a 260-mile run, far beyond any reasonable hunt. Women are better at this because they are smaller and can conserve energy better. They also have less fast twitch muscle. So that's why I was saying it's like really extreme stuff. There's no animal. Can you imagine chasing an animal for 260 miles until it has a heart attack and then you carry it home? Of course, the only reason you chase an animal that big is because it's the size of a freaking woolly mammoth, and then good luck carrying that back as a lady or two, 260 miles. That's why the women who need help getting their luggage into the rack of an airplane. I gotta bring back an elephant 260 miles. They show a woman breastfeeding during an ultramarathon, which I will admit I absolutely love. Just look at this exceptional Spartan woman. But it does not show evidence women hunted a lot in the past, or the very odd claim that they breastfed on hunts. Can you carrying your baby and running after your prey with your baby dangling from your boob? Anyway, but by far the most nonsense claim is when Neanderthals are brought up. one of the anthropologists has done significant research with Neanderthals. There are a lot of myths surrounding Neanderthals that I cannot dispel here, but will in the future if there is interest. What is key to understanding about Neanderthals is that they were not Homo sapiens, though they were still considered human, and we, Homo sapiens, could interbreed with them. Most importantly, they were not as social as us, living in smaller communities, sometimes even solitary. That being said, a Neanderthal in modern clothes and grooming could, contrary to popular belief, blend in with modern humans. For example, Joe Rogan. That's his joke, although I think it's a good joke. These anthropologists cited evidence of Neanderthals in how Homo sapien females may have acted, even when there's no evidence of similar trauma patterns anywhere in the archaeological record between Homo sapiens, just Neanderthals. So they're saying, well, Neanderthals lived alone, therefore the women hunted, therefore Homo sapiens, who didn't live alone and did divide labor between males and females, the women also hunted. As Homo sapiens lived in larger groups, a more precise division of labor is to be expected, whereas the opposite is true of Neanderthals, who would have to know, had to know more skills, right? A further claim, which the authors do not make clear, is about Homo sapiens or Neanderthals, cites grave goods. This is a common trick of modern anthropologists to support whatever theory they want. Recently, this was done with women warriors as well. And so from the article, say, what is more, females and males were buried in the same way in the Upper Paleolithic. Their bodies were interred with the same kinds of artifacts or grave goods, suggesting that the groups they lived in did not have social hierarchies based on sex. My gosh. So, all caps, he says, grave goods alone do not tell us anything about a culture because we do not know the justification for the grave goods. Grave goods can support other theories in conjunction with other archaeological finds, written sources, etc., but alone they mean nothing and can mean whatever. Further claims cite research into women hunting. They claim 79% of 63 foraging societies included women hunters, but the study does not discuss the rate at which the women hunt in these societies, only that they did hunt. Further, of this 79%, only 33% hunted large game. It is true that women did and do hunt, but these anthropologists only cite speculation, irrelevant Neanderthal data, and the presence of hunting in modern hunter-gatherers, which earlier the authors correctly dismissed as possibly not evidence of ancient hunter-gatherers. So, it is a very, very sad stuff. It's very sad stuff. And of course, I can't speak as to the motives of the authors. I don't know them. But in my opinion about this stuff as a whole, all it is just provoking women's resentment. Oh yeah, we even back then we did all the work, right? Provoking resentment is the best way to destroy a society. I know that sounds like hyperbole. It's really not. Provoking resentment is the best way to destroy a society. Can you imagine a marriage surviving if you were able to successfully provoke resentment from the woman to the man or the man to the woman? Right. This is why people who want to destroy you will try to provoke resentment within you. And it's just brutal. It's just brutal. So yeah, the hunting stuff is just wild. It's just wild. Oh yeah, so this was, and there's something else I'm going to, let me just get to your comments here about all of this. Have you ever watched the show Survivor before? It shows the male-female differences pretty clearly. I didn't watch Survivor, but I did watch the Bear Grylls one about the two different islands. And yes, there was quite a difference. All right. Could you drop the link to that spouse murder stat article, please? If I get to it, yeah, I've gone past it and I've refreshed the page. Sorry. If not, I'll put it in after. Let's see here. Those female softball pitchers are butch. What is there to gain from this research anyways? It's so tiring. Yeah, well, it's to make women resent men. That's what it's for. Thank you, Adam. I appreciate the tip. Well, if you're not carrying a massive creature 200 miles back to a camp, then likely the entire tribe is coming along. Wouldn't women's advantage be that there to enable them to carry children that distance, tailing behind the guys who are going to finish the animal off? Yeah. Oh, it's just hilarious. We was queens. Did anyone hear about the hoaxing scholars who sent fake journal studies and got them published as peer-reviewed? Yeah, for sure. When is a new History of Philosophers episode coming out? Hopefully in the next week or two. It's just I'm working on Kant, which is huge. Monstrous. Absolutely monstrous. So, okay, so as far as grave goods goes, like who gets buried with, right? Okay, so let's say a woman is buried with hunting implements. Well, it could be that that's a mark of respect, right? It could be that that's a mark of respect from the hunter, her husband, to her. It could be that they believe that everybody has to hunt in the afterlife, and therefore, like, they buried Egyptian pharaohs with stuff that they would need in the afterlife, so maybe they thought that everybody hunted in the afterlife, so you had to bury hunting implements with the woman, right? Maybe women did hunt because food was so short that you absolutely had to hunt, right? And so I can imagine there'd be situations where women would hunt, but that's only because food supply was so desperately short that they had to do that, and they were willing to leave the kids, right? So the older women would take care of the kids while the younger women went out to hunt. But that would be pretty bad, right? That would be a pretty desperate situation. So yeah, there are obviously times when, and maybe there was some fantastic female hunter. It could also be that they would enlist the infertile women, because, you know, 10% of married couples have a tough time conceiving, and there are infertile women and infertile men. So maybe the infertile women were brought out on the hunt because they didn't have kids to take care of at home. And yeah, women, it depends. Is hunting isn't just throwing spears at bison, right? Hunting is also trapping the smaller game, the rabbits and the pheasants and the grouse and things like that. So yeah, I mean, tons of stuff that they could do, right? Some women were buried with their husband's swords if they died in battle. You mean the husband's, I assume, right? Or she was killed with hunting implements and the killer avoided detection by burying the murder weapon. That is very sinister. The woman was the one who made the arrows or the knife. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, just they're trying to erase men. They're trying to erase the value of men from women's eyes so that women bond with the state. Women. So all of this is just about, you know, the left survives on single women, right? The left survives on single women. That's all. Like, without single women, there's really no such thing as the left. And so they have to keep women single to maintain their political base, and they do that by making women resentful of men and blah, blah, blah. It's all very dull and boring. We've heard it a million times before, so. Seth Dillon? Looks like Seth Rogen. Anyway. Seth Rogen said, regarding his girlfriend, he said, "We're effing psyched all the time. We're laying in bed on Saturday mornings, smoking weed, watching movies naked. If we had kids, we could not be effing doing this." Pretty devilish. Pretty devilish. Pretty devilish. Yeah, I click on that and it just refreshes my whole... it's terrible. Just terrible. Somebody said, "Well, what do you know? Seth Rogen and I have something in common after all. We're both thankful that he doesn't have children." Right. So this is, you know, you live life for yourself, right? Smoking weed, watching movies naked. That's a devilish temptation. Yeah. Like smoking weed over having children, being a drug addict over having children. I mean, I don't understand how... It sounds pompous and arrogant, and maybe it is, but I don't understand how anyone would fall for such an obvious psyop. "Hey man, Saturday mornings, you just smoke weed and watch movies naked." It's like, that's... what a sad life. And here's the funny thing too, is that Seth Rogen is pretty ambitious, right? He does a lot of movies, he writes, they did an animated series recently, and like, he's a pretty ambitious guy. So this is just him dangling, "Don't do anything with your life" in front of people and giving them the excuse to not have children. I love Seth Rant on 3 million years of evolution ends with me. I mean, talk about your life up in smoke, right? Smoking weed, watching movies naked. Ugh. I mean, smoke in your lungs in the morning, that's gross. I don't know. That's just really, really a sad, sad thing. But I guess, you know, I love, I mean, my daughter comes down in the morning, or I come down in the morning, and we're like, hey, what are we going to do with our day? You know, we've got a little bit of school stuff to do. And, you know, like today we drove out to get some more ducks. And the other day we drove to the mall and just roamed around and made fun of people and looked at clothes. It was just great. How would you not want to have that, right? Yeah, watching movies naked is a weird flex. It is, right? And it's really sad. And then, of course, you age, right? And everything he's talking about is passive, right? You lie in bed, smoking weed, which somebody else has produced, watching movies, which is passive, and the movies has to be produced by someone else. Someone else got to make your bed, like the actual bed frame, and like somebody else got to make your house. Somebody else got to deliver, make the TV. So you're just a parasite at that point, right? You're just, everyone else is doing stuff and you're just doing nothing. Now, I guess he could say, well, it's just Saturday mornings and all of that. But I remember Dennis Miller, was it Dennis Miller who said the same thing many years ago? Just about how, you know, Saturday mornings Sunday mornings used to be, you wake up and you read the New York Times cover to cover with your feet up on the windowsill and having a nice cup of coffee and do the crossword puzzle a bit. And now it's like, you've got to run down the hallway because one of your kids wet his bed after dreaming he was in Splash Mountain. So, yeah, I think it's a lure. It's a lure for other people to end up crippled. I think it's very sad. But if people believe it, then, I mean, what can you do? If you don't have the yearn to bring the gift of life to others because you enjoy it so much yourself, I don't foundationally understand what it is to love your life and to not pay it forward. Because he's saying, oh man, my life is so great. Life is so fantastic. How wonderful. What a wonderful life. And it's like, okay, so why wouldn't you want that for anyone else? Why wouldn't you want to create that? I don't know. It's incomprehensible to me. All right, so let's see here. What else did I have for y'all? Happy to take questions if you got. Otherwise, I'll continue to go through some of the things that I saved. And if I come across that other one, I for sure will post it in the chat, along with doing a really bad Southern accent. Mendacity. Oh, yeah, I like this one. Liz Adams wrote... somebody said, my wife is doing a presentation on peaceful parenting at a local church tonight. Should I be worried about torches and pitchforks outside soon? No, I wouldn't say so. I have a special ability in those areas. I wouldn't assume that it's going to be hers. Yeah, do you think people... So, yeah, I mean, I have a special ability to both enlighten and annoy people. Hopefully she's got the ability to enlighten people without annoying them. I've always felt it's vaguely unfair, but there's really not much you can do, that when I say things, people get really angry, but when other people say things, it's just perfectly accepted. I seem to have this special ability to just say things that other people can say, but with the added flavor of spicy rage from the audience, it just, I don't know what it is. It's maybe you guys can enlighten me, but I just have this ability to get other people's skin in a way that almost nobody else can. Like, I remember with Joe Rogan, right? Joe Rogan was like calling me out about, you know, talking about you don't have to spend time with abusive parents, right? And I told him, I was like, Dr. Phil said exactly the same thing. Nobody's calling him a cult leader. Like, it's just, some people say stuff and people are like, yeah, that makes sense. I say things and people lose their shit. I'm not sure exactly why. It's just some special genius that I have that I don't seem to be able to understand too well. I don't really seem to be able to control. And it doesn't seem to be that common. I mean, lots of other people have talked about voluntary societies and peaceful parenting and voluntary families and so on. But yeah, the special ability that I have to piss people off is something that, if harnessed, could probably power most of India. It just is a special force field around me that just provokes fairly corrupt people to Old Testament pangs of demonic rage. I have a thing. I don't quite understand it. I'm just telling the truth as I see it with all the reason and evidence I can muster. But yeah, I mean, that third time I was on the Joe Rogan show, man, that was a total bait and switch. That was a total ambush. Jeanette McCurdy even wrote a book about staying away from bad parents, and her book made the New York Times bestseller. Yeah, it's funny, right? People can talk about stuff and everyone else is like, yeah, that makes sense to me. I talk about things in a much more mild fashion and everybody loses their shit. It's just, I don't know, it's a characteristic of mine that maybe it has something to do with not being self-deprecating to that degree or something like that. But yeah, Jordan Peterson can tweet all about how like, don't have toxic people in your life. And everyone's like, yeah, that makes total sense for me. And I talk about how you don't have to spend time with abusive parents or abusive people, even parents, and people just lose their shit completely. There's something about the way that I present things, or there's something about my nature or something about my personality, but people just lose their shit around me. Yeah, the book was called I'm Glad My Mom Died. Yes, and her mother was a lot better than my mother, and her mother was a lot better than the parents of the people who call in a lot of times. It's difficult. It's different when a woman speaks about it. Men usually told to get over it. Well, yeah, but Dr. Phil, he's got a whole entire board of people. I don't know if you've, this is from many, many years ago. I think I kept this somewhere. Let me just see here. I think I did. Keep it somewhere for like, emergency information stuff. And I did keep the, because, you know, it's the kind of thing you never know how long it's going to last on the internet, right? Let me just see here. Oh, yeah, here we go. Here we go. So this was from many, many, many years. Many, many, many years ago. And this was on Dr. Phil's website like 20 years ago, long before, as far as I remember, long before I was talking about the voluntary family and defooing and so on. And my advice with defooing has always been the same. If you have issues with your parents, talk to them about it, try and reason them through with it, try and get them to see things, engage with a therapist, but you don't have to see abusive people. You don't. That's just a simple fact. So it's very mild, right? Very mild. And Dr. Phil has a whole board of experts that go over what he writes about, right? So this is, on Dr. Phil's website, which I assume he and his board have all approved, it says the emotional wounds caused by parental abuse can last long beyond childhood. If you want to rebuild a relationship with your parents now that you're both adults, Dr. Phil has some advice. Be heard. You won't be able to repair the relationship until your parent fully understands how the abuse has affected you. He or she may feel guilty, but you're the one who needs to be helped. Redefine the relationship. It's up to you to express yourself. Tell your parent what you need now that you're not getting. Be honest and clear. This is your chance to say exactly what you need emotionally. Nothing can change the past, but you can create a new history with your parents. Treat each other as the people you are now. Do what is best for you. Consider the possibility that it may not be healthy to have any sort of relationship with your parents. It's a difficult pill to swallow and should be used as the last option. However, it may be the option that helps you the most. I'm going to say that again. Consider the possibility that it may not be healthy to have any sort of relationship with your parents. It's a difficult pill to swallow and it should be used as the last option. However, it may be the option that helps you the most. How often is Dr. Phil called a crazy family-destroying cult leader, right? I'm not sure if it's even helpful for me to understand why, and I'm certainly happy to hear people's theories about why some people can say something and everyone's like, yeah, that checks out. And I say pretty much exactly the same thing and everybody loses their shit. It's just, I can't even tell you why. It just is the case. Does it feel mildly unfair? Yeah, a little bit. Oh my gosh. Somebody, what are your theories? You don't appeal to authority. That's something that stands out to me. It's crazy. I don't know if you're very familiar with him, but the comedian Sam Hyde has spoken kindly about you and your advice on his podcast from the odd times I've listened. Oh, that's nice. I think he's the guy that everyone pretends is a serial killer. Is that right? Or a mass murderer? Because you came to the conclusion with reason. Maybe. 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 You were just way ahead of the collective narrative, Steph. Oh, I don't know that. I mean, books that I read when I was in my teens were talking about you don't have to spend time with abusive people and it may be wise to not do it even if they're your parents. Because Dr. Phil is otherwise pretty pro-establishment and pro-elite. Became popular on Oprah. Yeah. I don't know why. Yeah, he was the ghost of Kiev, amongst other jokes. Yes, I think he's rolled with that, right? So yeah, it's something that I have just learned to live with and accept that I can put completely commonplace wisdoms in front of everyone, and everybody loses. I can literally say, a stitch in time saves nine, and people lose their shit. I can say, oh, that's just sour grapes. It's like, what do you have against grapes? Are you anti-Fox now? Bigot. Right? I mean, there's just something about me that people either really love or really hate. It doesn't really seem to be much in the middle. Now, that's fine. I will absolutely take people's insane, ridiculous hatred if it means that the people in my life love me. It's an easy, easy deal. Let's see here. I think a lot of it boils down to the attitude of you're supposed to be completely unemotional when talking about a difficult subject. I don't think that child abuse is something we shouldn't be passionate about, is it? Somebody says, I think it's because you call abusive parents immoral / evil. Dr. Phil, Gabor Mate, etc. don't. Okay. So let's say that's a thing, right? Maybe that is, right? Okay. So if it's bad to call people evil who abuse their children, why do people call me evil for saying that, right? Is it worse to abuse a child or to call someone evil who's abusing a child? That's just basic logic to me, right? So if Steph, you call people who abuse children evil, and so you're evil. It's like, so I'm evil for calling abusers evil, but the abusers aren't evil, so I'm unjust. Therefore, I'm evil. Like, so me mislabeling someone is worse than torturing and abusing children for 20 years. I leave it to the mind of the universe. I leave it to the mind of God. I leave it to the future conscience of the world. Maybe someone will come along with a theory as to why I just absolutely rub some people so much in the wrong way that they lose their minds completely. I think because you made it so engaging and woke up a lot of people, especially young people. Nobody reads Dr. Phil except bored moms. Oh, but Dr. Phil has a massive audience. Dr. Phil was like the biggest thing on daytime TV for like 20 years, right? So I don't know. Honestly, I'm maybe you guys are all right, and maybe it's something I just can't see. But it is a wild thing. Like, I've even seen people on Joe Rogan talk about not having abusive people in your life, and he's like, yep. I mean, he had Steven Tyler on. Steven Tyler, like, literally adopted a girl so that he could have her travel with him across state lines without getting arrested. And Joe Rogan's just chatting away with the guy. And hey, isn't it cool that you're an Aerosmith man? And tell me this story. And it's like, so a rock star who adopted an underage girl in order to have her follow him legally across state lines for we can all imagine what purpose. Joe Rogan's got no problem with that. But if I talk about not having abusive people in your life, which Joe Rogan has also talked about, I'm like the devil. And it's just, I don't know. I don't actually think about it too much because there's nothing I would change about what I'm doing, but it is just, it's just a while. Dr. Phil has that boring ass school counselor demeanor, though, a little bit, yeah, a little bit. Jesus called child abusers evil. This is you taking up the cross, millstone treatment. Yeah, yeah, maybe. Dr. Phil is coming out now against woke culture and the left is going after him hard, yeah. It would be a dick move to confront the rock star dude. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's funny, like, a lot of the rock stars of the 70s statutorily raped underage girls, like 14-year-old girls. You can go look this up. It's unbelievably stomach-churning. I've listened to a bunch of biographies of rock stars, particularly in the 70s. They preyed and raped underage girls on a regular basis. It was just appalling. Oh, yeah, the list is virtually endless. And you can look this stuff up for yourself. It's absolutely stomach-turning. Like, oh, girls younger than my daughter, 14-year-old girls, 13-year-old girls. I mean, Don Henley was just in court for something like this, right? Oh, I didn't know, right? There was a 16-year-old prostitute died in his house or something like that. And then he got attacked by the press for this, rightly so. And then he wrote dirty laundry in response. And yeah, I mean, you can, oh my God. Like, and so, and people love these guys. They love these guys. Love these guys. But I talk about not having abuse, like it's fine to not have abusive people in your life. And I'm the devil incarnate. It's wild. Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, the whole music industry is. Well, let's go ask Alanis Morissette what she thinks, right? Or the Sean Combs stuff now and. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know that there's something about me that I get only extremes in response. Hello, Farkle. Thank you for your kind wishes. I hope you're doing well too. I am doing well. Thank you. And yeah, if you have any thoughts or theories about this, I'm happy to hear it. I'm very happy with my life and things are going great and. Have you seen the PDD stuff? Oh, yeah. Yeah. Candace Owens just did a whole segment about that. Yeah. Yeah. It's about as ugly as can imagine, right? Again, we don't know what's proven, what's not proven. We'll sort of wait, but yeah. Yeah. I think the Steve Tyler stuff is, I think that was in his autobiography. So I don't think there's any doubt about that. Attacking parental child abuse head-on breaks state control. Well, but a lot of people for a long time have railed against the evils of child abuse. It's a mystery X factor in my personality, in my eyes, in my presentation, in my nature. It's something about it that just. It's like an exorcism in society, right? The devils only hate the good priests or something like that. I don't know exactly what it is, but there's something about me that just enrages some people. And yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, it's wild. But, you know, I'm here for you guys. I'm here for my friends and family. And in particular, we're all here for the future, right? We're all here for the next cycle of history so that they will know what happened and why, so that they don't have to do it over and over and over again. Because I think this cycle of history is getting pretty boring, isn't it? Wealth followed by corruption, followed by catastrophe. Wealth followed by government leverage, massive debt, hyperinflation, and collapse. I mean, I'm getting kind of tired of this. So anyway, for more about how to you should, if you haven't read my novel, The Present, my novels, The Present and the Future, you should. I think you should. You should. You can get them for free at freedomain.com/books. All right. But enough about my unique and God-given ability to enrage people. Let's see here. I remember watching the 1962 movie Lolita with my mom when I was a teenager on Turner Classic Movies. I asked her after, why would anyone read that book or make this movie? She told me the book was beautifully written. All I could think of was that the author, Vladimir Nabokov, was some kind of real slick devil, that my otherwise conservative mother would have ever finished such a book. The author is responsible for creating the term people hide CP under online. Is that right? Yes, I found the novel Lolita to be almost perfectly vile and stomach-turning. Almost perfectly vile and stomach-turning. Very clever, without a doubt. Very clever, without a doubt. Lolita. I remember him talking about how the tongue moves forward in the mouth. Lolita. And it does. It does. But yeah, he was a pretty monstrous fellow. When did he die? 1977. Yeah. Yeah, I thought that it was absolutely vile. Like, it's hell. That kind of book, was the guy has some massive porn collection later in the book. It's been a while. But I just remember reading this and thinking, this is hell. Like, this is what hell itself looks like, is this kind of world. It was just appalling. I sort of felt I had to finish it because it's such a classic, but it was really like, take breaks, get some fresh air, walk around, shake it off. Like, it was just wild. Just how fundamentally gross it all was. All right, did I lose my... Did I close that by accident? All right, hang on. Did I? I think I did it. I think I did. All right. Maybe it's certainty about morality because you have defined it and that comes across in your communication. I'm guessing Dr. Phil doesn't have that reasoned moral clarity and that comes across in his communications. Yeah, it could be. Maybe a trivial observation, but even though statistically there hasn't been much increase in peaceful parenting, the silver lining could be that time is on our side because every child who was peacefully parented will 100% be a peaceful parent themselves, whereas the opposite is not true, clearly. Yeah, I try not to think too much about our odds and possibilities. It tends not to be very white pilling for me. And in a sense, it doesn't matter. Like, I'm committed. You know, like if you're lost at sea and you have to pick a direction to go in and you're just swimming in that direction, you almost can't think about, is there land there or not? Or am I going in the right? You just got to keep going because you're committed, right? And so, there's no particular turning back. There's no turning around, right? I mean, I don't think you guys have ever heard me disavow something that I know to be true. I can't imagine that I will. So just keep swimming. Just keep swimming. All right. Any other last questions, comments, issues, challenges, problems, critiques, counter narratives, arguments, you name it. I am here for you. All right. Let me just see if there's anything else that grabbed my time, brain, and attention just while I'm waiting for any last questions to come in. And yeah, I did a long call-in show today, which was really good. Really good. So I may not do a full 2 hours. Oh yeah, this woman wrote, happily married to my 5'5" king for 8 years while you all are getting ghosted by 6'2" alcoholics with 7th grade reading levels, but go off about how you only date tall men, I guess. That was pretty cool. The rate of antidepressant use among 12 to 25 year olds increased 66% over 6 years. Hey, three sixes in a row. It almost seems coincidental. Right. So from 2016 to 2022, the rate of antidepressant use among 15 to 25 year olds increased 66%. People would much rather take a pill than examine their lives. That's a demonic offer. Okay, so there's a difference between what men like to read and what women like to read. So the top 10 most popular for men: philosophy, sequential art, greater than sign comics, politics, sequential art graphic novels, science fiction, history, religion, science literature. That's what men like to read. What women like to read the most is romance, historical romance, romance contemporary romance, women's fiction, chick lit, romance paranormal romance, romance adult fiction erotica, children's picture books, contemporary fantasy paranormal adult, which I assume means verbal pornography. So yeah, men and women are pretty much the same. Indiana has installed baby drop-offs, boxes where people can surrender their newborn babies anonymously. Excellent. Somebody posted the amount of full sugar energy drinks my diabetic boyfriend drank yesterday, and there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Excellent. BlackRock plans to buy Bitcoin ETFs to put into their own strategic fund, which specializes in preservation of capital. They're going to put Bitcoin into every single financial product they can and send the price to infinity. That's from the Bitcoin Therapist. Not an endorsement, just stuff that I found was interesting. Bitcoin Magazine reported, this is yesterday, BlackRock filed with the SEC to purchase Bitcoin ETF for its strategic income opportunities portfolio. Somebody wrote, this is the X account, not Jerome Powell, wrote, if you invested $10,000 in Bitcoin 3 years ago, you'd have $10,000 now. That's true. It's been a ride. It's been a ride and a half. I thought this was pretty funny. Somebody wrote, this is a joke, obviously. I live in constant fear that Trump will deport my Latina mother-in-law who lives at 1837 3rd Street, LA, 90023 Blue House. She gets off work at 6. That's very funny. All right, let's see. Oh, yeah, let's see here. How do I share this? Can I share this? Come on, let me embed post. No, it's going all over the place. I'm so sorry. Follow, add, remove, mute, block, view post engagements, embed post, report post. I literally cannot get to it. Why can I not get to it? You know what? I will get to it. I will find it. I don't know how far down it is, but I will find it for you. Oh, it seems to be in all 50 states, boys are forced to pay child support to their rapists or they go to prison. Isn't that wild? I'm just looking for the, it looks like they post, yeah, this is like, of course, men should never, ever imagine that they are entitled to sex from women, and women should never, ever think that they're entitled to money from men. Unfortunately, they post. Oh, no, here we go. Here we go. All right. I found it. This is not endorsing, of course, everything that this poster makes, blah, blah, blah. You understand. But I thought this is the data that you were looking for. I have a le source for a le you. Look at me going all Frenchified on you. There you go. All right. Well, thanks everyone for a wonderful evening. If you have any last tips, freedomain.com/donate. You can tip there. You can tip here on the app. You can tip over there on Rumble. Is it ever not the parents' fault? Have you ever dealt with these cases in your call-ins? Is it ever not the parents' fault? Oh, so what you're doing is you're kind of, and I appreciate the tip. So what you're doing is you're setting up a kind of trap where I then have to defend myself and say, well, you just always blame parents. Who has control in the relationship between parents and children? Who has the legal control? Who has the moral control? Who has the financial control? Who has the authority in the relationships between parents and children? Parents choose to have children. Children do not choose to be born. Parents, to some degree, choose the nature of their children by who they marry. The children don't choose their natures at all. It is, in a sense, imposed upon them by the choices of the parents. Life is imposed upon them. Children have no independence. They have no economic independence. They have no legal autonomy or authority. They are completely dependent upon the will and power and choices of the parents. So parents want to have all that authority, and naturally they do have all that authority. So I'm not sure what you mean when you say, is it ever not the parents' fault? Are you trying to say that a child who did not choose to be born, who did not choose his parents and has absolutely no independence for the first 18 years really of his life, and is utterly subject to the whims and preferences and choices of his parents, that the child should be responsible for the outcome of that relationship? I don't see how that would be the case at all. The analogy would be a woman who's married off as a little girl to some, I don't know, Mongolian warlord. Would you say that she is responsible for the resulting relationship? I think you would have a tough time making that case. So I don't know what, I'm not sure I understand the question. And I'm, as a parent myself, I'm responsible for the quality of my relationship with my daughter. Of course I am. I set the terms. I set the environment. I brought her into existence. I have the legal and moral authority and or power. I mean, for sure. Kids have to do, kids are programmed to do what their parents want them to do. So I'm not sure, are you trying to say that if there's a problem in the relationship between parent and child, is it ever not the parent's fault? Well, of course, there are things that the child can do better, an adult child. I don't talk to kids, but an adult child can do things better. But the quality of the relationship between the child and the parent is always on the parent. I mean, if the kid's 40 and the parent's 70, I mean, I don't know, right? It's all kind of messed up and complicated. But as children, yeah, it's all on the parents. Yeah, 100%, 100%. And I was convinced of that before I became a parent. I'm almost infinitely more convinced of that. Now, if there's a problem in my relationship between myself and my daughter, all on me. Now, does that mean that she has no responsibility for anything, blah, blah, blah? No, but I taught her all about those responsibilities. So it still comes back to me. So anyway, I hope that helps. You're welcome. And I appreciate the tip. It's sort of like, look at it this way. If there's a company that has 100,000 employees and the company goes bankrupt, how much would you blame the janitor? Oh man, if that janitor had just cleaned better, that company would be doing just fine. Lazy janitor. He's the reason why the whole thing collapsed. No. Now, is the janitor's part completely insignificant? No, it has to have some value, otherwise the janitor wouldn't get paid. But you wouldn't, you know, if NVIDIA goes tits up tomorrow, you wouldn't blame the custodial staff or the office cleaners, would you? I mean, they don't have any authority in the situation, they have any power. So of course it wouldn't be on them. The only thing they can do is their own little part. They can't make any big decisions about anything. It's the same thing with children and parents. So I hope that helps. All right. Thanks, everyone, for a wonderful evening. I love you guys to death. Sorry I won't be around tomorrow, but I will be back for Friday, and I will get another chapter done of Peaceful Parenting this week. And lots of love from up here. Take care, my friends. Thank you for your support. freedomain.com/donate. I'll talk to you soon.